Illusions, The Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah by Richard Bach, Chapter 2, Part 3. The airplane rolled to a stop beside us, no extra power required, and the propeller clanked softly to a stop. I looked closely. There were no bugs on the propeller. Not so much as a single fly killed on that 8-foot blade. I sprang to help, unshackled the girl's safety belt, opened the little front cockpit door for her, and showed her where to step so her foot wouldn't go through the wing fabric. "How'd you like that?" I said. She didn't know I spoke. "Grandpa, I'm not afraid. I wasn't scared, honest. The house looked like a little toy, and Mom waved at me, and Don said I was scared just because I fell and died once, and I don't have to be afraid anymore. I'm going to be a pilot, Grandpa. I'm going to have an airplane and work on the engine myself and fly everywhere and give rides. Can I do that?" Shimoda smiled at the man and shrugged his shoulders. "He told you you were going to be a pilot, did he, Sarah?" "No, but I am. I'm already good with engines, you know that." "Well, you can talk about that with your mother. Time for us to be getting home." The two thanked us, and one walked, and one ran to the pickup truck, both changed by what had happened in the field and in the sky. Two automobiles arrived, then another, and we had a noon rush of people who wanted to see Ferris from the air. We flew 12 or 13 flights as fast as we could get them off, and after that I made a run to the station in town to get car gas for the fleet. Then a few passengers, a few more, and it was evening, and we flew solid back-to-back flights till sunset. A sign somewhere said population 200, and by dark I was thinking we had flown them all, and some out-of-towners as well. I forgot in the rush of flying to ask about Sarah and what Don had told her, whether he'd made up the story or if he thought it was true, about dying. And every once in a while I watched his plane closely while passengers changed seats. Not a mark on it, no oil drop anywhere, and he apparently flew to dodge the bugs that I had to wipe from my windshield every hour or two. It was just a little light in the sky when we quit. By the time I laid dry corn stalks in my tin stove, set them over with charcoal bricks, and lit the fire, it was full dark, the firelight throwing colors back from the airplanes parked close and from the golden straw about us. I peered into the grocery box. "It's soup or stew or spaghettios," I said, "or pears or peaches. Want some hot peaches?" "No difference," Don said mildly. "Anything or nothing." "Man, aren't you hungry? This has been a busy day." "You haven't given me much to be hungry for, unless that's good stew," he said. I opened the stew can with my Swiss Air officer's escape and evasion knife, did a similar job on the spaghettios, and popped both cans over the fire. My pockets were tight with cash. This was one of the pleasanter times of day for me. I pulled the bills out and counted, not bothering much to fold them flat. It came to $147, and I figured in my head, which is not easy for me, let's see, 4 and carry the 2, 49 flights today. Broke $100 day, Don. Just me and the fleet. You must have broke 200 easy. You fly mostly two at a time? Mostly, he said. About this teacher you're looking for, he went on. I ain't looking for no teacher, I said. I'm counting money. I can go a week on this. I can be rained out cold for one solid week. He looked at me and smiled. When you're done swimming in your money, he said, Would you mind passing me the stew? End of chapter 2.